Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. And Ozan, 9:09 on this Tuesday morning, Jeff Nowak joins us, WWL Saints sideline reporter, to talk about the Saints and what we've seen so far and what we can expect to see. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Today's National Dessert Day, and I was asking people if they could have only one dessert. What would it be? Do you have any ideas what it would be?
Yeah, I'm not really a big dessert guy. I'm usually a Ben and Jerry's,
ice cream kind of thing,
pint kind of situation. Yeah. That's usually my go-to. But I'm not big into dairy, or sugar. So
somebody said
I'm a boring person.
You don't remember this? Somebody said McKenzie's banana coffee cake. Somebody else said McKenzie's banana whipped cream pie. Somebody else said McKenzie's eclair. So a lot of McKenzie's aficionados out there.
I'm gonna revise my take. A cheesecake would be my go-to.
Cheesecake?
Yeah, I've decided in real time.
I think it's got to be one of those things where no matter what it is, after you finish, it's like, that's it, I'm done with it. And then it's like, no, I got to have one more bite. I'm surprised wedding cake didn't pop up. A lot of people like wedding cake, too. Anyway.
Yeah, I can see that.
Let's talk about the Saints. What did you see on Sunday?
Definitely not a happy ending meal for that game, was there? What I saw on Sunday was unfortunately a lot of what we've seen throughout the rest of the season. We're kind of at the point in the season where we've seen all the different ways the Saints are going to lose games. Mm. At least I hope so. Mm. And it's just kind of like playing the hits, right? Like, can't get off the field on third down, a fumble in a critical situation when you're going in for a potential go ahead score. You get down in the red zone, you can't score. And this was a weird game because one of the missed opportunities came from like the 20.5-yard line, but I'm counting that, right? Mm-hmm. You for the fourth consecutive game, the opposing offense puts up 14 points on their first two offensive possessions. You kind of settle in, but you're playing catch up the whole game, right? It's just a lot of the same. And, the unfortunate thing is, that's just where you are, right? Like when you kind of lean into a rebuild and you decide, hey, we're going to play young players, we're going to develop in real time, you take your lumps, and that's, I think, what you saw in that game is, the Patriots receivers made plays in kind of contested moments, and the Saints defensive backs, while, I felt like they were in good coverage a lot of the game, they just couldn't make the plays on the ball in those big moments, right? Kayshon Boutte had a really nice touchdown catch over Kool-Aid McKinstry that Kool-Aid ended up with at the end, but, he didn't win it fast enough, and Kayshon came down with it. That final, I think it was a 20-yard catch late in the game. It was like, hey, the defender's right there, but the receiver catches the ball anyway. And, those are the type of kind of 50-50 moments that the Saints aren't winning right now. And in a close game, which that was another close game, those are going to cost you.
I heard Deuce say during the broadcast, as did you, because you were on the sideline listening, I'm sure, if you could hear, about the Saints defense kind of getting caught peeking back. Is that something they've been doing all season, the Saints defensive backs, now looking back at the quarterback, or something that maybe they started doing after their success against the Giants, where they thought, let's maybe lose a little bit of discipline and let's come up with a big play?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a change so much as I think Brandon Staley's defense, one of the benefits for defensive backs, for linebackers, is you're playing a lot more zone. You're able to play with your eyes a lot more than you probably could in Dennis Allen's scheme, which was a lot more man-to-man heavy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're turning your back to the quarterback, you're running downfield. If you're not doing that as much in this system. I think any young player, there's a potential to kind of play with your eyes a little bit in the wrong situations and get caught on maybe a pump fake or a double move. They were leaving those guys on an island a lot more than I thought they would. And, like there was a 3rd and 27 that I was like, why is Quincy Riley on an island here against, I think it was Mac Hollins even. And it's like, okay, it's 3rd and 27, like just play, make him, force him to throw it underneath. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think Drake May, you got to give him a lot of credit in that game. Like he, it's not just that the Saints were giving up big pass plays. He was dotting the ball. I mean, some of these passes he was making, like that touchdown over Kool-Aid McKinstry, like that's a dot on the run. You know, the Saints got the benefit of a few, let's call them soft offensive pass interference calls. Like they were offensive pass interference in my opinion, but like they were not like, oh, you got to call that. I don't know. I haven't gotten a chance to really go back and dive in. That's usually my Tuesday activity. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time going back through the tape. Let me tell you what you just said
resonated with me, because I think he did throw some dots, Drake May, but because the receivers were so open, it wasn't appreciated. Does that make sense?
There was a few instances of that. You know, the first long touchdown to DeMario Douglas, it was just he kind of got lost in coverage. I mean, when you're playing zone, there's going to be situations where it's like, well, why is that guy wide open? Well, he found a soft spot in the zone and he got to it.
But it goes to Yak as well, right, in ball placement?
Yeah, I mean, that's where you kind of look at the quarterback and say that's how he's creating value. And, you know, I came out of that game thinking, man, Drake May is a superstar, and the Saints defense, you know, a lot of the quarterbacks they face, you come out of there thinking, man, that guy's really good. So I don't know. It's tough to gauge, but it was really kind of a disappointing follow-up to what I thought was probably their best secondary game against the Giants.
So when it comes to, like, you're talking about the third and whatever it was, are we at the stage in the season now where, okay, we're not going to Super Bowl, we're not going to playoffs, but the only thing we can do at this point, and this is not to say that the games are not going to be entertaining and that the Saints are tanking it, but the Saints are doing what they can do to put them in the best position moving forward, and that's seeing who can play and who can under what conditions.
I mean, yes and no. I don't think that you could ever sell that in the locker room in the sense of like, the season's over. Like they're still going and they're still playing and saying, hey, we're going to win all of our games and we're gonna make it. Like that has to be the mindset you go at it from a team perspective. But I mean, I think you've already seen that, right? Like you're starting a rookie at cornerback, you're starting a rookie at safety. You know, they started working in Danny Stutzman, so the rookie linebacker for some reps throughout the course of the game. Like that's not an insignificant thing that you're taking Pete Werner off the field in key instances and saying, hey, let's see what the rookie has. Mm-hmm. The trade deadline's coming up and I think you have to at 1-5 and let's see what happens over the next three games. But you know, there's a scenario where you're going to the trade deadline at 1-8. Like you gotta be listening to some offers at that point for some of your key players. And the question is just how aggressive are you in making moves and setting up for the future? But yeah, I mean, you have to be pragmatic about it. Like you're 1-5. Like that's what we kind of went in knowing, like at least I did. Anyone who's kind of pragmatic about it, went in knowing this was going to be kind of a take your medicine season. You're trying to build towards something. And I think there have been a lot of positives, even in a 1-5 start, but it's still a 1-5 start. Like you can only put so much lipstick on that and make it into something positive.
Trade deadlines, November 4th. What are some scenarios that you could envision, Jeff?
You know, well, I mean, going into last week, Pete Werner made the most sense as a guy that you might be looking at shopping around, and getting Danny Stutzman into those reps, I think is very relevant into that, because if you did end up trading him, you would want to at least know that guy's been on the field before. Isaiah Stalbert has also been getting some reps in the defense, but they've been primarily like third down packages, and that's been something they've been doing going back all the way to week 3. So that's nothing new. But yeah, he's the guy to me that would be the most obvious target for other teams. And I look at the 49ers, they just lost Fred Warner, very similar name. I don't know if you read anything into that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like there's going to be teams that need linebacker help. And he's a guy that, I don't know, as I've watched him in this scheme, I just don't know if he fits it like a glove in the way that you'd want for the inside linebacker position. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he's a talented player on a contract that the team would have some control over. It's not an unreasonable contract that teams would be scoffing at. He's a young player who they could bring, who another team could bring in and really kind of build into their system without having to worry about inking a new contract. So he's the guy that makes a ton of sense to me if the Saints end up moving off of him. But then you're going to hear, I'm sure teams are going to come calling about Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, who's in a contract year. They're going to have to decide whether to pay him. You got the veterans in DeMario Davis and Cam Jordan. And Alvin Kamara has already told the front office he's not interested in leaving, so I don't expect him to be. I mean, teams might still call, but I don't expect him to be moved. And I think that's going to be the question for some of those veteran guys is, you know, I think guys like Cam, guys like DeMario, guys that are so entrenched in your locker room that your culture is kind of built around them, you're not shipping those guys out against their wishes. If they want to go somewhere where they can chase a ring and there's a deal on the table, I think they could get moved. But I do think that, you know, you do kind of extend that to them as well, and at least kind of clear it with them first. But we'll see. You know, you don't know. Like Marshawn Lattimore, the Marshawn Lattimore trade last year was a good example of, hey, you know, you don't want to trade that guy, but you're getting a really good return and you can really build on the future from that. So, you know, I just think this is going to be the year where, you know, I don't think there's going to be a fire sale, if you understand what I'm saying there. Like, I don't think they're going to flip guys out for just nothing, like bringing in seventh round picks and the like. But you cannot look at this team and say, and kind of stick your head in the sand and say, yeah, we're going to keep doing it this way because this way is not really working right now.
What would Pete Werner command, do you think?
That's a tough question. I'd have to look at kind of what the going rate would be for, you know, a 26-year-old linebacker in that situation. But you'd hope for at least a day two pick out of it. Like, that's kind of where, if you can get a third round pick in any of these trades, that's a good value. And anything higher than that would be a steal. And that's where you kind of like, you know, if someone's coming in and offering you, like, I think what the Panthers got for Christian McCaffrey, which would be like a couple day two picks and a day three pick, something in that range. Like, that's a really good value for a team that's building. And you have already shipped out a couple future assets. So I do think there will be some incentive to kind of, you know, that fourth round pick you sent out for Devon Valet, get that back at the very least. So that's kind of what you're looking at. But they're still a few weeks away. I don't think they're going to be making early moves, because I just don't know if there's an incentive there. But we'll have to wait and see.
So who is calling the shots on that, on honoring what Alvin Kamara said, and Lord knows he's given it all to the Saints, or Cam Jordan? I don't know that, no disrespect to Cam Jordan at all, but he is in probably the last year of his career. Would you agree?
I mean, that's the front office, right? Like, we'll have to see with Cam. I've learned to not try to guess when his career might end. He's still playing well, in my opinion. I don't think he's going to look at it and say, I just don't have anything left. But, you know, when you're a veteran player and you're going through this type of season, that doesn't exactly motivate you to, you know, do a lot of work that goes into an NFL season. But I mean, the Saints, you know, their front office is very collaborative. I don't think it's a one-man operation making these decisions. And I think there's going to be a lot of discussions, a lot of debate over what the value is and what the acceptable value is. And, you know, they brought in new faces every year, and I think they value those voices. So I can't sit here and say whose decision it is at the end. It's going to be Mickey Loomis's decision in the end. He's the GM. He gets to call those shots. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot more goes into that than him just kind of rubber stamping stuff.
I'm going to ask the audience here at 504-260-1870, no texting and driving. I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want to disrespect anybody. But when it comes to longtime Saints that have been all in and given it all and they want to retire here, do you honor that as a front office, or do you say, no, this is a business, sorry, I'm going to trade you while there's still some value for you? How would you interpret that as a fan? That's what I hear from you at 504-260-1870. I don't know that it would rub me right to have AK get traded somewhere that he doesn't want to go after the loyalty that he's shown to the Saints, or Cam Jordan, for example. But text me at 504-260-1870, even DeMario Davis, for that matter. And I think it also goes, Jeff, from my opinion, just as a fan, not a sideline reporter, is involvement in the community, right? Because I think you gotta give that a little bit something, too. But then again, that crosses over into, are we a business here? Are we a family? When I say it's a family, you say it's a business.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Say it's a business, you say it's a family. We'll continue the conversation. We'll come back. 922 traffic now. No, just a break on WWL. 929, Jeff Nowak joins us now, Saints sideline reporter. I know we always say it, but you really do miss a lot of stuff if you don't turn down the sound of the national people and turn up the sound of Deuce and Mike Haas and Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Deuce, for example, using the phrase third and Metairie on Sunday, and you won't hear that from any national announcer. Tell me about Spencer Rattler. I don't know how you can knock this guy at all.
Yeah, you know, the red zone efficiency is probably the biggest downside of what he's done this season.
You can't and, catch you know, it too, Jeff.
It's not just him, right? Like, yeah. There's a lot more to it than just that. I thought, you know, he should have had a touchdown pass in that game. Chris Olave, you know, one of my pet peeves is kind of acting as if a diving catch in the end zone is like this, like, you know, ho-hum thing that should happen 10 times out of 10 times. It's a very difficult catch, but it's a catch that you expect your star wide receiver to make. And if you're going to go in the offseason and command, hey, I want this big contract,
those are the
catches you got to make. You know, that's the tape that you got to show your team and say, this is the value I'm adding. This is why you pay me.
Or
he wasn't able to make those plays.
The ball's a little bit behind you, maybe, not perfectly thrown, those kind of things. Those are the catches you got to make.
If you want to make $30 million as a receiver, it's got to be because you pick up your quarterback when he doesn't throw a perfect pass, right? And what I've seen from Spencer is just a guy who's running the system. He's playing with confidence. I thought he pushed the ball downfield in that game. He handled zone coverage a little bit better in that game. And his air yards, you know, his yards per attempt were higher than we've seen this year, because that's been the other thing. It's like he's throwing a lot near the line of scrimmage. He's not making mistakes. There was one turnover-worthy play, you know, where Christian Ellis got his hand on it, could have been intercepted, kind of got bailed out there. But, no, I mean, I don't know how you watch him play and come away thinking he's the reason that this team is 1-5. Mm-hmm. You know, Juwan Johnson, that fumble was brutal. You know, I think they had the momentum there. I talked to Devon Godshaw after the game, and he was like, yeah, we were scoring on that drive. There's no question. And, you know, it's not just one guy. It's not just one play. You had opportunities after that, right? Like the defense came on the field and got a stop, got you the ball back, couldn't get it done. So, you know, it's tough because you're talking about a young player. You have a rookie quarterback kind of sitting there, and at some point the losses pile up to the extent that it would kind of be probably organizational malpractice to an extent to get to the end of this season in a lost season if it continues that way and not see the rookie at all. So I think that does come into the equation at some point. Regardless of how Spencer is playing, you do want to find out what you have in Tyler, because you're going to have to make difficult choices in next year's draft. Mm-hmm. And you may have a premium pick, right? So you got to have some idea of what you got there. But no, I mean, there's a lot of ways this season could have gone, and you get to 1-5 and you're already kind of ready to pull the trigger there. Spencer has played well. You know, he's avoided sacks. He's avoided negative plays. There's still room to grow. There's still meat on the bone there. But I don't know. I think the Saints feel pretty good about where they're at from a quarterback perspective right now. And it's a lot of the questions are independent of that, which is not what I expected to be saying after 6 weeks.
Blake Groupie seems to have gotten his groove back.
Well, you know, it's funny as a kicker. Like, you could have a perfect day, but, you know, it's only perfect until your next miss. And then suddenly you're right back where you were. So he's got to keep it going. But, yeah, he needed a day like that, no question. You know, 4-for-4. The longest was from 54, but, you know, honestly, the kick from 48 felt more impactful in the sense that he was 0-2 from 40 to 49 going into that game, which you can't miss those kicks. Those are the bread and butter kicks, right? Those are the 50-plus. If you miss from 50-plus, I put that on the offense because they didn't move the ball well enough. They forced the kicker to execute a long range kick, they should have moved the ball. From 40 to 49, that's got to be well over 90%. You know, you're not going to make all of them, but you got to be making 9 out of 10. And so that was cool to see. And there's a reason the Saints are stuck with him through the struggles, because they know he is a good kicker. There's enough tape of him out there, you know, executing, that they felt like, hey, we can get this guy back. We just got to find a way. One thing that changed is in the dome, in the direction he's kicking, they blacked out the screens, which I thought was interesting. They put like Florida Lee logos on them, just to kind of simplify the background. And I'm not sure if that's something he asked for, or
wait,
something
say that
they did
again?
Kind of proactively. So rather than kind of having all the flashing lights on the board while he's kicking, they blacked out the screen. So it's just kind of a simplified background, which is not something they had done previously.
Hmm.
And I don't know if he requested that or if that was something they just decided to do. But, you know, I think when you go 4 for 4 doing that, I think that's going to be something they keep doing at home.
Seems like I'm going back to Sean Payton and the NFL films with, son, you just hit that Florida Lee, right? When he told So at what point, Chris Olave, and I don't mean to harp on him, but is this the kind of thing with a receiver where all of a sudden it kind of clicks, or has he been around long enough where when somebody shows you who they are, believe them?
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, I think it's just a matter of, you got to make plays, man. Like, you got opportunities. You got to be a value added player. And it's funny, because we're talking about a guy that was the leading receiver in the game, right? Like, he had 6 catches for 98 yards. On its face, it's like, well, why are we complaining about that game? It's because you watch the game and you know how much more there was on the bone. Should have been, you know, 8 for 140 and a touchdown, and suddenly he's the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, right? Like, it's, and that's just like, it's really a question of, you know, you look at Rashid Shaheed's day, and he had 4 catches for like 40 yards, and we're not complaining about that, because, you know, we think of Chris Olave as like, you're the superstar. We need you to be the star. And right now, you look at the Saints offense, and you just, I think one of the reasons they're losing games is because the guys that you have, who you would qualify as, if you have those, you're kind of putting together a roster and you're like, okay, where's the stars? And you put this player, star player, star player, star player. Well, the star players are the ones that are missing opportunities. And that's just something you can't have if you're going to want to win games at a consistent level. Like, when you were back winning games, it was, hey, we could throw to Michael Thomas in these big moments. We know he's going to make this catch, and go back and say Marcus Colston, whatever. Like, you always have, you need those players who are gonna make plays in big moments. The Patriots had those players. The Saints didn't have those players. So, you know, one thing I'm confident in is Spencer Rattler's going to keep throwing him the ball. That's one of the things I appreciate about Spencer as a quarterback. And one of the things I know his pass catches appreciate about him is he's not the type of guy that's like, you dropped the ball, I'm not going back to you. Like, I'm going to hold. Like, he's going to keep giving Chris opportunities. And he did in that game, right? Like, it's not like he missed that catch in the end zone and suddenly stopped throwing to him. He kept going back to him. Same thing in Buffalo, right? He had that drop at the end of the first half. He threw that interception. He had another drop, but it's like he kept going back to him because, you know, it's like, that's my guy. So he's going to have opportunities to, and it's a long time left in this season to kind of change that narrative, but he's going to have to go out there and do it.
Tell me about the Bears real quick.
Yeah, you know, the Bears last night, they got a big win over the Commanders, which, you know, it's the second consecutive week the Saints are facing a team coming off a massive kind of road primetime win. And they're going to get after you. Like, I think their pass rush is really effective. We know Dennis Allen can coach up defensive backs as well as anybody. And he's going to maybe, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of extra motivation on his end to you know, I don't think he's going to leave anything in the bag. If he's got stuff he's been saving, some unscouted looks, he'll bring them out this week, I imagine. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. And then, yeah, Caleb Williams, just another good young quarterback. We've seen it each of the last, you know, 3 weeks. You know, these kind of talented young quarterbacks. One was a rookie. The other two are second-year players. And that 2024 draft class is really, really impressive. You know, some really good receivers, Rome Odunze, DJ Moore. I've seen a lot of DJ Moore because he was with the Panthers for a while. So, no, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge that, you know, it's going to be a little cooler, I imagine, out in Chicago. You know, Saints fans might not appreciate this, but a lot of the country, it's cold in October.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a little different for them. You know, then that's, you know, the elements, you're not going to get rain or snow, it doesn't seem like, but Blake Groupie's going to have to kick in those elements. So that's something for him. to deal with. Soldier Field is kind of notoriously an interesting surface to try to play on. So, no, I mean, this is a team that I would say hasn't played particularly well on the road. They were okay in Buffalo, but, you know, Seattle was a nightmare. So we'll see. I hope they can go out and kind of bounce back, because I think there's a lot of frustration in that locker room right now. And, you know, taking it out on the Bears would be a nice way to bounce back.
Partly cloudy, 53 degrees, 13 yep. mile an hour winds at kickoff. So be prepared. First trip out to Soldier Field, Jeff?
For me, yes. They were out there in 2019, I believe. That was the Teddy Bridgewater game. I think that's mm-hmm. the last time they've played the Bears in Chicago, but I could be wrong. It might have been one since then.
Enjoy it, man. Savor. Did you see the Teddy Bridgewater commercial where he comes in as a backup listener?
I did.
I love it.
It's very pretty telling good. Of Teddy's personality.
It is. He was a perfect guy for that. That's exactly what I thought. Thank you, Jeff. Have a good trip.
Sure, Tommy.
We'll be listening. All right, 9:39, 21 till 10. We'll talk about air traffic controllers and airline travel when we come back. Right now, time for WWL traffic. I-946, 14 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We're getting ready to talk to our friend Henry Hartevelt, a travel industry analyst.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That Atmosphere Research Group, travel industry market research firm, about the government shutdown and the effect that it's had on travel and air traffic controllers specifically. I looked it up. An air traffic controller makes about, on the average, $144,000 a year, which is not bad money, but that's an awful lot of responsibility if you think about it. And I guess you can go through the college path, or you can go to some kind of FAA academy as I check into it. But not that I'm going to go become an air traffic controller, but would you want to be an air traffic controller? 504-260-1870. It says it calls for an associate's degree, which is like a two-year college degree. I don't know that you, what work skills, obviously multitasking is what it takes, but that would be a tremendous amount of responsibility and I guess even keep you awake at night. I don't know. I don't know if I'd want that job. On the other end of it, you got the TSA agents that make about $45,000, $50,000 a year, but if they're not there on the job, they too can cause delays in the flight industry. So if you've traveled, I'd love to hear from you at 504-260-1870 to let me know what it's been like. Have you been experiencing any delays or not? We've been talking about the Saints. We've been talking about desserts because it's National Dessert Day. Some of the texts that are come up about the Saints, just like when Carr was quarterback, he wasn't the problem. Rattler has no choice. There's no one else to throw to. They have zero elite wide receivers, running back, or tight end. Your star players are paid to make the difficult plays. And that goes back to Chris Olave, which is, I don't know if all of a sudden he'll start helping his quarterback out and start making those difficult catches. As Jeff said, a diving catch in the end zone is not easy, but this is the best of the best on an NFL field, right? So we'll see. And then somebody else talked about trading players. Leaders like Alvin Kamara, Cameron Jordan, and DeMario Davis are assets that our young locker room can use for sure, and trading them for a sixth or seventh round pick isn't worth it. I wouldn't trade them, and I wouldn't either. Now we go to Henry Hartevelt, who is our friend, our guest, travel industry analyst at Atmosphere Research Group, travel industry market research firm. How you doing, Henry?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm well.
Before you came on, I was talking about the I looked up the air traffic control salary is about $144,000, which is not bad money, but for the responsibility that's involved, I don't know if you do that job for the money or not. What is the situation with air traffic controller staffing before the government shutdown and now during it, and is it delaying flights?
Sure, Tom. You're right. I mean, $144,000 is certainly a lot of money, but it's not a huge amount, and people don't go into the profession to get rich. Our air traffic controllers go in because they are passionate about air traffic control management. Before the shutdown, we were roughly 3,000 air traffic controllers short in the country, and Secretary of Transportation Duffy said that the FAA was going to expedite hiring more people to become air traffic controllers. And indeed, there are people currently in training. Now, however, the added stress of not knowing when you will be paid is starting to have an effect on air traffic controllers. We don't have a precise number on how many are calling in sick. And so far, the numbers seem to be relatively small. But there have been some scary incidents. There was one time where at the Hollywood Burbank Airport in at Metro LA, there were no air traffic controllers in the airport's control tower. They had to close the airport. I and many other industry analysts and observers, as well as people at airlines, are very concerned that in the next few days, if we don't get a shutdown in the next week or so, if we don't get the shutdown resolved, these sick out rates are going to increase. We can't have air traffic controllers who are already under a lot of stress feeling more stressed, and they will call out sick to protect their mental health if they feel that is the safest thing for them to do.
Yeah, the safest thing for everybody, too, right? I mean, not just themselves. And I guess I'm thinking, Henry, as you say that, I don't know if you work in short staff. Does that mean the controller, he or she, has more flights to deal with, or do they just cut down on the amount of flights that the airport can handle, or do you know?
So, Tommy, that's a smart question. Generally, what will happen is at the airport level, for example, out at Louis B. Armstrong New Orleans International, if they're short staffed, they rarely will ask airlines to cut flights. It just means more work on the remaining controllers. But that creates another safety problem. I mean, I hate to say this. Look at what happened in January in Washington, D.C. at Reagan National Airport. They were short-staffed that night. Two planes collided. We don't know if having more controllers on duty would have helped avoid that, but it may have. And so I'm very concerned that if we get to be too short-staffed, then the airports will say to the airlines, we simply cannot safely handle all the flights that are scheduled. You got to figure out how to cut back. Here's the number of flights we can handle during an hour. You figure out how to make it work.
And I would guess at some point that stress, you can only shove so much stuff into a pipe, right? At some point, it kind of finds its way to the pilots as well?
Well, yes. Although, again, the pilots at least have the security that they know they will be paid. There's a lot of...
Well, no, I'm talking about during the actual performance of their duties, because if they got an air traffic controller that's working under stress and then covering more than they're supposed to be covering, it makes it more dangerous for the pilots as well, right? And puts the onus on them.
It does. Absolutely. It could, it could have a waterfall effect, so to speak, where the pilots become stressed, worrying about... will there be enough air traffic controllers on duty? Will they be able to get from A to B on time as they expect? Will there be unexpected delays, whether en route or as they wait to land or take off at specific airports? So this could really mess up the entire U.S. air transportation system.
Yeah, I was saying, Henry, I was wondering earlier, we began this morning at 6 o'clock our time talking about what would it take politically to end the shutdown. I would think that if it could go through the air traffic controllers, that could be the catalyst, because if it really starts to affect air travel in the country, at that point, the public is going to lose patience and say, get this thing settled.
Well, I'm sure there are people who are already saying that, and you're right, that could be another catalyst. But I will add to your point that in a few weeks, we have the Thanksgiving holiday coming up.
Yeah.
And that is the busiest air travel weekend in the country, because it's so compressed generally between Wednesday and Sunday of the Thanksgiving holiday. And if people miss out on that, if their travel plans are affected, it's going to be really bad. So I'm hoping that there will be a compromise and settlement and that the government gets back to work well before.
I only have 20 seconds left. Henry, is there anything that the public can do now to put themselves in a better position?
Just be patient, and especially if you've got connecting flights, make sure you've got adequate time between your connections so that if you are delayed, you can still make your flight.
I'd rather spend an hour in an airport extra than run around. You?
Same.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Yeah, there you go. Appreciate it as always. Henry Hartevelt, travel industry analyst at Atmosphere Research Group, a travel industry market research firm. We'll talk to Newell when we come back, find out what he's got planned for us here today on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.